jump right in.
When we discuss the concepts of tuma and tahara, I think as women, this is something that has usually not crossed our minds until we prepare to get married or until we get married and we think about the laws of hilchot nida. However, for me, getting married brought about an additional awareness of tuma and tahara because I married into a family of kohanim. I remember very clearly driving with my husband, who was not then yet my husband, as I came to visit his family the first time. And there is a cemetery right near his house in Passaic. And he showed me, he said, look up, you see how those trees look really funny? The trees are growing over the cemetery on one side. And then as soon as the gate to the cemetery comes up, in that place, the trees are trimmed straight upwards, so that my husband doesn't have to frantically swerve out of the way to avoid being under the same tree as a cemetery when he's driving. Or I remember, we had a very interesting situation, fast forward a few years to when my second son was born last January. And we were, my husband and I and our new baby were sitting in the hospital room. And I was getting ready to send the baby to the nursery for the night when we hear over the loudspeaker, code blue, meaning that unfortunately someone was about to pass away in the surrounding units, or they anticipated that they were going to pass away. And we quickly called up Ravyona Reese and said, are we allowed to send our baby out of the room that we're in right now? Because there is a halacha that if a Kohen hears that there is Tumat meat, there is the impurity of a dead body outside of where he is right then. He needs to stay put. He needs to close all the doors so that the Tumah cannot access him. And these laws of Tumah and Tahara apply to a baby from the moment that he's born to a little baby Kohen. So first of all, I felt very important. I'm like, wow, I now have to take care of this little baby Kohen and I have to make sure that he does not become Tumah. But it was a really crazy shayla, and Rabbi Reese said, keep the baby in the room for as long as you can until you think it's reasonable that whatever is going to transpire outside has transpired, and then you can send him to the nursery. Also, if you happen to ask a nurse where the code blue is taking place, you can also figure out if it's okay to go to the nursery. But these concepts of tuma and tahara that all of a sudden did seem relevant in my life, it was very disconcerting. And like I said, any woman who gets married and now enters into the new halachic realm of the laws of Hilchot Nida, Tumah and Tahara can come as quite a shock. Because Tumah and Tahara are not something that are very relevant in our lives today. That unless you are a Kohen or are married to a Kohen, or unless you are a married woman observing the laws of Tumah Nida, there is no more observance of the laws of Tumah and Tahara in our lives. So what I want to explore today is if we look into this week's parashiyot, the parashiyot of Tazria Mitzora, which focus almost entirely on concepts of Tumah and Tahara, I want to explore what are Tumah and Tahara? What is the relationship between the two? Are they simply opposites? Does one allow for the other? Does one cause the other? What is the relationship between Tumah and Tahara, and how is it relevant in our lives today? So let's delve right into the parashiyot. We are in the middle of Sefer Vayikra, this Sefer that is focused on more of these concepts that seem very obscure to us, Karbano, Tumah and Tahara, concepts of Mikdash, all of these ideas that seem very far away from our lives today. And as we begin the parasha, it talks about a yoledet, a woman who has given birth. Daber al kol b'nei Yisrael limor, isha ki tazria v'yalda zachar, v'tmeya shiva yamim, ki mei nidat dota titma. A woman who gives birth to a boy, she should be tamei for 7 days. And then the psukim continue, v'im nikivati leid v'tmeya shvuayim, and if she gives birth to a girl, she should become tmeya for 2 weeks. V'shisha yamim tishiv al dmei tara. And then double the amount of time. When it comes to Yoledet, it's a little complicated. She is Tameh for either 1 week or 2 weeks, whether it is a boy or a girl. And then she is in Dmei Tahara which is pure blood, which is a category that we no longer have today. It's dam tohar. There were a number of instances that were considered the viewing of blood that was not considered to be tamei. Depending on whether it's a boy or a girl, there's also a certain amount of time for that tamei tahara. Also, as we move later on in the parsha, we have the explanation of a man who is a man or a woman who gets sara'at. V'ra'ah koheno tobi yom hashvi'i she'mit. He has to be checked out by the kohen to see what his status is. Is this sara'at? Is he tameh? Is he tahor? So the pasuk explains to us that on the seventh day, the kohen checks him again. V'hine kahei hanega, if the blotch of tzara'at, if the negav, if the word is escaping me, if the affliction, if the patch, whatever we'll call it, has darkened, the lo pasha hanega, or if it has not spread, or v'tihara, then the kohen will declare him tahor. Mispatachat he the chibis begadav v'tihar. Then he can enter into the process of becoming tahor. He washes his clothes. He has to purify himself. And again, if we look later on, v'impashotiv sheva or v'tima kohino to negahu. However, if the blotch has spread, he is now declared tamei again by the kohen. And I could pull out a number of different psukim from throughout these two parashiyot. They give us different instances of this person is tamei. This is how they become tahor. It comes up not only in relation to the yoledet, the woman who has given birth, but also a zav, a man who has a strange omission, a zava and a nida, which is much more confusing than the zav. The zava and the nida are different types of women who see an omission of blood from their body. We also have a man who lets out shechvat zera, a man who has a regular seminal emission. And we have the mitzora, someone who is afflicted with sara'at, which is a spiritual affliction that manifests itself physically, that is related to speaking lashon hara. And sara'at can appear not only on one's body, but it can also appear on one's clothing, and it can appear on one's home. So we have all of these categories of tumah and tahara. But until this point, I have avoided translating tumah and tahara. What do these words themselves mean? Often we see them translated. If you read the basic English translation that I gave you on the source sheet, again, the source sheet is in the chat for anyone who doesn't have it. If you look at the source sheet, it says pure and impure. It doesn't really teach me so much, except that I know if someone tells me something's pure, that means they're telling me it's tahor, and if they tell me it's impure, that means they're telling me it's tamei. It doesn't really give me insight into what it means. Unfortunately, sometimes these words are explained as clean and unclean, whether they add in the word ritually, that something is ritually unclean or ritually impure, or ritually clean or pure. However, these also don't really give me an understanding, because that can't possibly be true. There is nothing unclean about someone who has come into contact with a dead body. They don't have any more dirt on their body than they did before they came into contact with the dead body. Or if you think about the mitzora, yes, he has a physical ailment, but he's not dirty. And also, we really would like to think that the Torah does not view a woman who is going through her natural bodily functions as someone who is unclean. This, I would say, is one of the prime examples of something that gets lost in translation. That it is almost impossible to convey in one quick word what tumah and tahara are outside of the Hebrew language. That there seems to be this new level that is not about cleanliness. And purity doesn't really explain it to us. What does that mean? It's pure and impure. Even impure has a tone of negativity, whereas it can't be that tumah is something that is totally negative. Because if you think about it, when someone becomes tamei lamit, the source of all tumah is a corpse. That is kind of the epitome of something that is tamei. And burying a dead body is considered to be the highest level of chesed. It is one of the greatest mitzvot that you can engage in. So it can't possibly be that we are passing this negative judgment call on something that is seen to be so positive in Judaism. The whole concept doesn't make sense, let alone if we think about how does one purify themselves. You purify yourself in the mikvah. Now, Baruch Hashem, women's mikvahot are beautiful and usually very clean and make you think of a spa much more than some sort of ancient ritual that one has to engage in. However, from what I hear, men's mikvahot are not exactly the prime example of cleanliness. That one can go into the men's mikvah and come out physically very dirty. However, you have now been purified. You have now been mitaher. You come out physically dirty, but spiritually tahor. And on the opposite side, you can take 150 showers. You can bathe for 24 hours straight, and you will never become tahor. You'll be clean. You'll be very, very clean. But you will not be any more tahor than when you began the process. So that's why I would like to say that these definitions of pure, impure, clean, unclean, these seeming, in which we seemingly pass a negative judgment call on Tumah and Tahara, are not going to work well for us. So we're going to have to delve deeper. So for the duration of this year, I'm not going to translate the words Tumah and Tahara. We are going to understand that certain things make you tameh, and then you go through a process of tahara to transition out of this tumah status. But what does it mean? And to understand what it means, I think we have to first understand what can a person who is tameh not engage in. A person who is tameh, first and foremost, cannot enter the mikdash. That if one has ever experienced the southern wall excavations, the new area that they have been exploring in the old city of Yerushalayim, I don't know if anyone joined, we had a virtual tour last year of the southern wall excavations that was very interesting. You see that it is lined with mikvaot, because people on their trip up to the mikdash would have to make sure that they were tahor in order to be able to enter. So first and foremost, one who is tameh, we can explain as one who is inaccessible to the mikdash. They may not enter into the mikdash. And one who is tahor is one who is allowed that access to the mikdash. We know that a woman who is in nida is a special category of tumah, in which she is not only inaccessible to the mikdash, but she is also inaccessible to her husband. She may not have relations with her husband. And again, there is the entire area of halacha that comes out from that specific commandment that doesn't apply to the other areas of tumah. It only applies to the area of a nida. A mitzora has an even stronger level of tumah, that he cannot be within the camp of Bnei Israel at all. There were the three camps. There was the Machane Kehuna, in which there was the Mishkan. There was the Machane Levia, which was right outside. And then there was the Machane Yisrael. People who were experiencing the different levels of Tumah could access different points. None were allowed to enter into the Mikdash itself, but different types of Tumah allowed them or barred them from different camps. But the Mitzora had to be outside of all three camps. And lastly, someone who is Tameh cannot touch anything that is Hekdish. They cannot eat from Karbanot. They cannot have contact directly with Kedusha that is associated with the Mikdash. If anyone read A.J. Jacobson's My Year of Living Biblically, if you haven't, it is a great read. It is about a man who is Jewish but not religious, and he decides that he is going to experiment with leading a year of his life only according to what it says in the Torah. So he didn't take into account any of the oral law, any of halakha, only what it said in the written Torah, and he ends up with a very funny year in which his wife gets angry at him. So while she is menstruating, she decides to sit on every single thing in the entire house, which then makes it impure for him, and he is not allowed to sit anywhere. So he ends up having to buy himself one of those like sitting canes so he can make sure that he is safe wherever he goes. He takes it everywhere so that he doesn't possibly come to sit on something that was tummy. So that's just always what sticks out in my mind when I think about that sort of tumah. So now we see that if we wanted to give a little bit of an explanation to what tamā tahara is in English, I think the most apropos definition would be someone who is tamē is someone who is inaccessible to kedusha, who is inaccessible to the mikdash, and someone who is tahor is someone who does have access to the mikdash. But that's a little bit of a mouthful. So instead of trying to translate it into English, let's delve right in. Let's see. We're going to give three approaches. What are tumah and tahara? What is their source? How does this relate to the seemingly very different examples that were given of things that cause tumah and tahara? And we're going to see, most importantly, how they relate to our lives today. That when we read through Sefer Vayikra, we are not only fulfilling our obligation to prepare for the time of Mashiach, but we are really learning about something that directly impacts us today. The first approach stems from the opinion of the Ramban. If you look in the Ramban, you skip down to the second line, he says, "V'tam tumat shechvat zera." He is delving into the explanation of each type of tumah. So he says, what is the explanation of the tumah of some of a man who has a seminal emission? He says, "Afal pi shehu b'teva hatulada," even though giving forth semen is part of the natural way of conception, "Kitam tumat hamit," it has a taste of tumat hamit. It has some connection to death. "Ki hamakor mishchat v'sholchiv lo yodea im mishchat zaro, o yihya mimenu vlad nutzar." When a man gives forth semen in relations with his wife, he is not sure if this semen will go to waste, and therefore it will be a loss of potential life, or if it will create a new life. "Ubizochrei tumat hamit be'ezrat hamimit v'hamechaye yipa'er v'cha hakeri ve'oda sker v'nida." The Ramban says, "I will also, in my further writings, explain how tumat mate relates to someone who is a zav, who has a different type of emission, and someone who is a nida." The Ramban believes that the source of all tumah and tahara is death. That each of the examples that were given of tumah stem from something related to death. Why is this important, that the Ramban says everything is related to death? Because if we think about our religion, the Jewish religion is one that is extremely focused on life. So phrases that we have heard repeatedly over the past year throughout the pandemic were that Hashem is a God that loves life, that Hashem commands us, v'chai bahem, that you are meant to live through the mitzvot, v'lo yamot bahem. We don't aim to martyr ourselves. We don't aim to die through doing the mitzvot. Hashem also says, u'bacharta b'chayim, you should choose life. Hashem over and over emphasizes throughout the Torah that we are a religion that focuses on life. This doesn't mean that we are afraid of death, that we avoid death, that we don't respect the dead body. There were religions that used to cast their dead out into the ocean, never to be seen again. There was no sense of respect for a dead body. We know we have a tremendous amount of respect for a dead body, but we are not a religion that focuses on death. We think about in the opposite was ancient Egypt. Ancient Egypt had an obsession with death. They were constantly focusing on what they would bring into the afterlife. They focused their building projects on building pyramids, building these royal tombs that would glorify the dead. So many of their practices were revolved around mummification, the afterlife, everything that had to do with death. But when Hashem took us out of Egypt, he took us out of this death-focused mindset. Hashem said, "I am a living God. I am a God who focuses on life. I want you to live through my mitzvot. I want you to be able to purify yourself from this death focus in Egypt and move forward, move on to living, to life, to a focus on life." So therefore, as the Ramban explains to us, tumah, impurity, inaccessibility to kedusha is somehow connected to death. How do we see this in the different examples? He says the primary example of what is the av avot hatumah, the greatest manifestation of tumah, is a corpse. Because a corpse is dead. That just purely represents to us death. But how does this relate to the other examples we see within our parshiyot? The nida, a woman who is menstruating. We don't think about this every single month until some people are trying to conceive and they see their monthly period as a sign that they have not successfully created a new life that month. But a woman's period is a sign that there is a slight loss of life, that every month there is the potential to create a new life. And when a woman menstruates, it is a sign that that life has not been created. There is not death as much as there is loss of potential life. The same is true for a zav, or a man who has a seminal emission, that that semen could have gone to create a new life, and it didn't. So there is a tinge of death. The Mitzorah, Aharon says when he davens for Miriam, right after they speak Lashon Hara about Moshe, Aharon davens for Miriam, and he says, Vayomer Aharon al Moshe, Bi Aduni al na tishit alinu chatat asher nu'alnu v'asher chatanu. Aharon says, we know we sinned. Al na tihi kamit asher b'titomi rachamimo v'yochal chati b'saro. Aharon says, do not make my sister like someone who is dead, who their flesh is being consumed. Tzara'at is seen to be the death and decay of the skin. The tzara'at was not just something that came upon the skin. It was an actual decaying, a sign of death within the skin. That's why Chazal say that someone who is a mitzora is considered to be among the category of those who is considered to be dead. That there is this element of death that has now been brought into their life. But then how do we explain childbirth? Why would a woman who just brought a new life into the world, what does that have to do with death? And Chazal explained to us that that is because a woman was holding the greatest connection to life that one can have. That Hashem is the one who rules over bringing children into this world, but Hashem makes us his partner. And when a woman is holding a baby within her, she is literally holding within her a mechanism for creating life. And so when she gives birth, even though she has just brought new life into the world, her body itself loses this element of bringing that life into the world, that the support system for that new life has now left her body. So there is, again, this tinge of separation from life. So that is the first approach, that of the Ramban, that the Ramban says that all of our tuma stems from death. And that, therefore, makes sense why we then purify ourselves, why we are mitaher through the mikvah. Water, mayim, is referred to in the Torah as mayim chayim. We will read very soon in a number of parshiot, but not in so long. In Parsha Chukah, when we talk about the para aduma, the mechanism through which we purify ourselves from tuma me, from the tuma that is brought about through death directly. And for that, we use as part of the recipe for this concoction that we sprinkle on the one who is tameh, we include mayim chayim. We include this live water, water that is constantly moving, that is the basis, the source of all life, that without water, we cannot continue to live, not for even a day. We need water. Yes, you could probably live without water for a day, whatever, 3 days. You cannot live without water. Water is the basis of our existence. The Gemara in Tanis explains that the day that rain was created was as important as the day that the entire world was created. Because without rain that sustains the earth, without water, we cannot continue to live. That is why Torah is compared to water, because just like water is the source of our physical life, Torah is the source of our spiritual life. So then it makes perfect sense that if the source of all tuma is going to be death, then the source of all tahara is going to be water. That one must enter in to this natural pool of water in order to become purified. That we know that when the world as a whole needed to be cleansed, Hashem used water as that mechanism, as we saw in the Mabel. That it says, Vayhi geshem al ha'aretz arba'im yom v'arba'im laila. And again, there's a hint in the 40 that there are 40 sa'ah of water in a mikvah, and it rained on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights, that the Mabel was the mikvah for the entire world, that the world needed purification, and that purification had to come through water. Lastly, Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch says beautifully, when a person immerses his entire body in such water, water that has not lost its elemental his elemental nature, into this element, all connections between him and the water, and sinks completely from the realm of impurity is severed. He leaves the ground of man and returns for a moment to the world of the elements in order to begin a new life of purity. Symbolically, he is reborn. Refer says that when we enter into the water, we completely cleanse ourselves of anything physical that can block ourselves from the water, and we enter into this mikvah. We are then mitaher, we are purified, because we have entered into the most basic element, the source of life. We have cleansed ourselves, and when we come out of the mikvah, we are now like someone who has been reborn, that it is just like a baby who comes out of the womb, which is also filled with this liquid water substance. The baby comes into the world completely pure. So too, when we come out of the mikvah, we have been completely mitaher. We are now completely tahor as one who has been reborn. So that is the first approach, that tumah is connection to death, and therefore to be mitaher, we have to reconnect ourselves to the source of life. The second approach is one that I believe is a little less common, that I think many people do connect tumah to death, but this one, when I was reading about it, this struck me as something that was a little different. Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch says, a dead body tends to bring home to one's mind a fact which is able to support the pernicious misconception, which is called tumah. For in fact, there lies before us actual evidence that man must submit to the power of physical forces. That in this corpse that lies before us, it is not the real human being. That the real human being, the actual man, which is the powers of physical force cannot touch, had departed from here before the body. Merely its earthly envelope could fall under the withering law of earthly nature. Reverse says, what is a corpse? A corpse is the epitome of physicality. That tumah is the idea that we are purely physical beings. That Rav Hirsch is presenting this idea that we are going to see carried on in the Ramchal, in Mesilas Yesharim. That tumah is the thought that we are purely physical, and tahara is elevating physicality to a level of spirituality. That a corpse is the epitome of physicality because the neshama, which is the tahor, the spiritual element, has left the body, and we are left with something that is purely physical. Rav Hirsch says, when we are in a state of tumah, we are able to look at the world and see only the physical. We are able to believe that we are only physical beings, that we are completely subject to the physicality around us. And he said, through being mitaher, through purifying ourselves, is elevating that physical to a level of spirituality. That we take the physical and we believe, no, human beings are not just physical, we are spiritual, which explains why the mikvah is not something that cleanses or makes one more dirty. Because it doesn't have to do with the physicality. It has to do with how we think about physicality. That we don't just see our bodies as something that is physical, we see there as being a higher level spiritual component. The Ramchal explains in his Prakim in Mesilas Yesharim, for anyone who is not familiar with Mesilas Yesharim, it is structured like a ladder. And the purpose of this ladder is to climb to a level of spiritual perfection. That there are the different steps in which we separate ourselves from sin, we then try to cleanse our minds, and we try to get to a level of spirituality. The final level is Nevuah, and we are trying to work up this ladder. And the Ramchal explains, Hatara hi tikun haliv hamachshavu. What is tahara? What is purity? Hi tikun haliv hamachshavu. It is perfecting our minds and our thoughts. Vizeh halashon matzaunu itzal David. This is the language that we find by David HaMelech. Shenemar b'tehillim, lev tahor bara li Elokim. Hashem created for me a pure neshama. V'inyana shelo yaniach adam makom liyitzer b'ma'asav. The purpose of tahara is that a man should not allow a place for the yitzer hara within his actions. Ela yihyu kol ma'asav al tzad ha-chachma v'hayira, v'lo al tzad ha-chit v'hataiva. He says tahara of the mind is when one acts in life in a way in which has been purified. That one acts based on their thoughts and their ideas, they don't just allow their body to do what it wants. This is even in the most physical of actions. That lo yikavin el hahana'a v'hatayva klal. He says, even when we engage in the most physical of actions, there's an element of we engaged in physicality, and therefore we have to recalibrate, and we have to be mitzaher ourselves. That explains why a man who would have a seminal emission would become tame, because he says, while one is allowed within the right context to engage in relations with your wife in the proper kedusha and tahara, he says there is an aspect of where you have leaned slightly towards the physical. And now there needs to be a recalibration. There needs to be a tahara. You have to recalibrate and reassociate with your spiritual nature. And even the most physical of things can bring us back to tahara. So tahara and tuma focus on the relationship between the physical and the mind. So when we engage in physicality, there needs to be this element of tahara that follows. So what does this mean in terms of the examples that we have? It's clear when it comes to the dead body that we can look at the dead body and see only physicality. That is something that we have to be mitzaher. That's why we even perform a tahara to a dead body, that we remember that even though there is a physical body laying before us, that the neshama has left, we still believe in being mitzaher this situation, that we want to make sure that even when someone is in their most physical state, there is still an element of tahara. When it comes to semen or menstruation, it's easy to focus on just the physical, to think that your body is just going through its natural processes that has nothing to do with our spirituality. But that's why we also elevate these experiences, that we say we are going to bring an element of tahara into this experience, that every single month a woman can just say, okay, my body is just doing what it needs to. But we bring an element of tahara into this cycle every single month. The mitzora is an interesting relation to this concept. That if you look at the mitzora misused one of the most potentially spiritual kohot that we are given. Our power of speech, Chazal say, is what distinguishes us from the animal kingdom. That the animal kingdom can make noises, they can communicate, but they don't have the level of thinking that is connected to their speech. The mitzora saw his power of speech like that of an animal. Someone who was able to speak however they want, who didn't have to be mitaher this process of speech. So someone who has misused his koach of speech now has to be mitaher. He is given a physical manifestation of what he has done wrong so that he will be able to refocus and recalibrate and be mitaher himself. He will be able to engage in a process of tahara to his koach of speech. Rav Soloveitchik talks about this concept when it comes to tkiat shofar. He says when it comes to tkiat shofar, we think of two characters involved in this situation. There is the one who is the tokeya, the one who blows the shofar, and there is the one who is the listener. But the Rav said that sin is what has caused us to think in this way, that there is one who has to be the one impacting, and there is the one who is impacted. He said only once we are in this world of tumah do we see them as two separate things. We see the mashpia and the one who is taking. We see the one who is giving and the one who gains. The Rav says we are meant to see in a world of pure tahara as things being one in the same. That's why we make the bracha of lishmoa kol shofar, to hear the sound of the shofar, because we recognize that there is something, we are playing an active role even though we are on the receiving end, that they are one in the same, that there is not separate physicality and spirituality. They are one in the same. And the Rav says he connects this idea to the idea of Tuma and Tahara. That in a world of pure Tahara, we would recognize that it's not the one who is blowing and the one who is hearing. They are all one in the same. There is spirituality coming along with the physicality. There is one gaining while they are giving. There is one giving while they are receiving. All of these things are one in the same. So that is the second approach. So the second approach is that Tuma and Tahara is not about death and life. Rather, it is about physicality and spirituality and making them one in the same. And the last approach is one that I learned most recently and I thought I really connected to. I believe if one's noticed that as we go through each of these different approaches, the Yoledet in which we start this parsha, the woman who has just given birth is probably the most difficult to fit in. That we're able to make it work, but in my personal opinion, I don't think the Yoledet fits as smoothly into either of these explanations that we've provided until this point as some of the other examples do. Like the physicality, spirituality example, trying to connect that to the Yoledet is possible. That we can talk about, one can see this process of childbirth as something that is so physical that your body just knows what to do, that your body expands and contracts in certain ways so that the baby can come out of your body. But this is something that is entirely spiritual, that one knows that without God, there would clearly be no way that this process could be successful. And therefore, it fits in, it works. But I don't think that the Yoledet is so easy to fit into either of these other opinions. So the last approach is that of the Kutzker Rebbe. The Kutzker Rebbe comments when it says, V'yalda zachar v'tmeya shivat yamin, that a woman who gives birth to a baby boy should be tamei for 7 days. Hatuma hine totza'a shel histaklus hashchina. What is tuma? Tuma is something that fills a void after histaklus Hashchina. When the Shechina of Hashem separates from a situation, Tuma fills in that void. Ka'asher ha'kdusha mistakalet, mistaleket, ba'a ha'tuma v'tosefet et mikoma. The Tuma comes and fills in that place. So whenever Kedusha leaves a situation, Tuma comes and fills in that void. B'domeh l'tumat ha'mit, the prime example, again, is with a dead body. That a body is pure, a body is tahor, a body is kadosh. And when death occurs and the neshama leaves from the body, Hashem's shechina has in essence left from this body, and it is replaced with tumah. Chachaminu amru shebekesher liyoledet. So our chachamim attach this concept to that of the yoledet. Ki mafteach halida nitun bidei Hashem yisbarach, ve'ino masur bidei shum shaliach. The power of childbirth is one of the keys that only Hashem holds. That anyone who has given birth knows that no matter how many checkups you go through, no matter how many calculations the doctors try to make, in the end of the day, any doctor will tell you they have no idea how this baby is going to come, when this baby is going to come, what the labor and delivery will look like. And yes, we have progressed so far in the realm of prenatal testing, and we can predict what this baby will be like when they come out. But even, I remember with my first son, I had to go for like a measurement test so they could see how big the baby was going to be. And they said, they're like, this is very approximate. We don't really know. That with all of the advances of modern technology, the amount, the little that they know about childbirth really shows us that this is one of those keys that is entirely in Hashem's hands. That's why it says by each of the imahot that Hashem was the one who had to physically open up her womb. Yotzei efo shebechol leida yishna hashra shel kedusha elokit elyona. In every childbirth, there is a strong concentration of hashrat hashchina. Hashem strongly rests his shechina in every childbirth. Harimi meila shemi hisalkut hakedusha ba'a hatuma mimekoma. So that once the childbirth is over, and Hashem doesn't leave the situation, Hashem is always present. We know that Hashem is present in every human being, and if anything, there is a new hashrat hashchina in this newborn baby. But this extra level, this higher concentration of hashrat hashchina that took place at this childbirth has left, and it is then replaced with Kedusha. It is then replaced with Tuma. So I thought that this explanation teaches us two very valuable points, and that not only emphasizes for us the relationship between Tuma and Tahara, that they are not merely opposites, as we have talked about in the previous two explanations, that if we are going to characterize the relationship between Tuma and Tahara according to the Ramban, or according to Rav Hirsch and the Ramchal, it would be that they are opposites, that they represent things that are very opposite from one another, and therefore we explain why one comes when the other is not there. However, the Kutzker Rebbe brings us a very different relationship between Tuma and Tahara. It's not merely that they are opposites from one another, rather they fill in for one another. that in a situation in which there is kedusha, tumah will not be present. In a situation where kedusha is missing in some sense, that's where tumah fills in the void. And I feel like according to this explanation, not only do we now have a very beautiful explanation for the tumah of yoledet, the tumah mate, the tumah of shechvat zera and nida, that there is a situation in which there was this potential for further hasharat hashchina through the creation of a child that is therefore not present when these things leave the body, that the opportunity for that extra hasharat hashchina has left, and the tumah is therefore filled in its place. And I believe there's an additional level there, that if we say the relationship between husband and wife is one of the greatest manifestations of shchina in this world, that when ish and isha are together, that hashchina shuriya b'nehem, that the shchina is right there with them, then we believe that at the moment that they separate from one another, there is an element of histaklus hashchina, that the shchina has left a little bit, and that's why we are left with a situation of tumah. But I believe this also gives us a very applicable lesson for our lives, which is the way in which I want to end the shir, that we can look at tumah and tahara, and we can explain it that we are not meant to feel unclean or impure. There's no judgment call against something that is tameh. That it is inaccessibility to the Mishkan. That there are times when we are meant to be in the Mikdash and there are times when we are not. And we can go into so many different explanations for why we would ever want to not be allowed into the Mikdash, but that's for another shir. But I believe that this leaves us in today's day and age when we don't have the Mikdash. And tumah and tahara are present in our lives, but in very, very small ways and in very specific contexts. I think this gives us a way to internalize the message of tumah and tahara. That if we look at our lives as opportunities that cannot be empty, they are times that must be filled either with kedusha, or if chas v'shalom, there is a lack of kedusha in our lives, then tumah will fill in its place. And I think this is a very empowering message, that we are able to look at every moment in our lives and say, how are we going to fill this moment? That Hashem is showing us through this contrast, the stark contrast of a dead body or a yoledet, in which the moment the kedusha is present in a slightly smaller manner, that's when tumah fills in. Hashem is saying, you have the power to fill each and every moment in your life. You can either choose to fill it and bring my shchina, bring the kedusha down into that moment, or if not, there will be a void, but that void will be filled with something. It will be filled with tumah. So Mir Tz Hashem, may we be able to internalize these different messages. And Mir Tz Hashem, may we be using them so soon in the Beis HaMikdash. May this be directly applicable in our lives, whether or not we can be in the Mikdash in that very moment. But until that time, may we take this power and recognize that we can choose to fill the moments in our lives with kedusha, with tahara, and recognize when tumah has come into our lives and figure out how to be mitahar from those moments. Thank you, everyone, for joining today. If you have any questions.